1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great day today, whether you're listening live here on Saturday afternoon on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620, or you're listening to the podcast version of this show, wherever you get your podcasts, whenever you so desire. We hope to make your day just a little bit better. We're bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. And I say we because on the line is my co-host, Jeremy Branch. Welcome, Jeremy.
Thank you so much for having me. I want to give a quick shout out to two potential listeners of this week, and I'm not sure they're going to, but I have a friend, Scott, and a friend, John, who mentioned that they were going to be checking out the show today. They were actually wondering if it was a call-in show so that they could call and give me a hard time, and I said, we will make sure that they are never able to do that. But if they're listening to the show, just wanted to say hello.
No, I would love for us to be able to be a call-in show. Unfortunately, the way we do the show, as many of you know, is we do pre-record it, so it's not really possible to do a call-in show. If we, you know, ever get enough of an audience that they think it's worth putting us on during the week, you know, that would be another story. But, you know, if that's something you want to see or hear, then, you know, make sure you call over to the folks at News Radio 92.3 or at ADX Communications in Pensacola. Let them know that you love what we do and that you listen regularly and that you would like a chance to communicate what you think of what we're saying with us live on the air. We'd love to be able to do that sometime. Of course, you can also always email me at gopensacola@gmail.com and let us know what you think of the show. We very rarely get to hear from any of you folks, and we would love to do so. So, you know,
that would be awesome. But, and I don't want to make that whole thing all about me, because when I was speaking to John, he said, has Julio done the radio for a while longer than the past 2 or 3 years that you've been doing it? And I said, yeah, as a matter of fact, he has been a fixture of 92.3 for a while, and he also does another show with Andy, and he's like, does he come on and do movie reviews? And I said, that's Julio. So he knew who you were, and I think he's eager to check it out.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks for listening. Let us know what you think of the show, and by all means, do give Jeremy a hard time.
Yeah, please.
Because that's what friends are for, man.
That's exactly right.
Seriously, friends are for giving you a good-natured hard time. Like, there's no better friendships than the friendships that you can. I think you and I have that friendship, Jeremy, where, you know, you can have that, like, kind of good-natured hard time with each other and give each other a little crap, but know that it comes from a place of friendship and love.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm a full subscriber to that line of thinking.
Well, we got a couple of things that we wanted to make sure we talked about today. The bulk of the show we're going to talk about, you know, of course, this is our last show before Halloween. So we've got a little Halloween topic that we've got in the back pocket for you. For all you spooky fans, you know, we love you. You know, we love our spooky stuff too. And we're going to talk about some of that. Wanted to talk about a couple of things here in the intro briefly. One is that we lost an artist in the past couple of weeks who is pretty much synonymous with the movies, but not for what you see on the screen.
Yeah.
That of course is Drew Struzan. If you don't know that name, you know his work. This is the man behind some of the most iconic movie posters of the past 40 years, 45, 50 years.
Yeah.
Something like that. Starting in the late 70s and through to, you know, he retired just a few years ago. Unfortunately, he was suffering from Alzheimer's disease, so, you know, that's what we lost him to. But very heavily associated with the Star Wars franchise, the Indiana Jones franchise, did all three Back to the Future posters, the Goonies, Blade Runner,
Harry Potter.
The Harry Potter posters. It's an iconic style. It's a style that you will recognize when you see a movie poster that he did. And
wasn't it a beautiful era for movie posters when each of them was just this amazing work of art? I know there was a period of time where there was a lot of critique around the way that Marvel was handling posters in particular, where a lot of times they were composites. But if you look at Drew Struzan's work, every single one of them is just this gorgeous and elaborate painting where he's able to capture the essence of the characters and the actors in a way that just few other have ever been able to.
Well, and I would argue that a lot of those Marvel posters that have been critiqued is Marvel trying to do a photographic version of what Drew Struzan did on canvas.
I think that's a very fair point.
Yeah, and it's not the same thing. You know, you don't get the same thing out of photos that you get out of these beautiful works of art this man did. And, you know, I have a few of his posters up on my wall in my office. I have one wall of my office that is entirely dedicated to Drew Struzan posters. I've got Back to the Future Part 3. I've got Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. And I've got The Force Awakens.
Incredible.
So, yeah, you know, just like I said, just somebody that is completely a master and somebody that is already missed without a doubt. Something else that is already missed is a whole lot of money out of my wallet. Yeah, I have, I don't know if any of you have been on Whatnot, but I have been spending entirely too much time and thus entirely too much money on Whatnot. And
that's what it is.
Whatnot is an app that basically, imagine if you combined eBay and TikTok into one app.
Oh no, that basically sounds dangerous.
Yeah, it is live auctions with interactive hosts that are on video, and they're there talking to you during the entire show and showing you what they're selling, but they also chit chat, and you know, you get this like friendly atmosphere going, and you get that friendly atmosphere going and you don't notice that you're dropping all kinds of money on all this stuff, you know. And you know, it's stuff that I collect. So, you know, there's that too. And then there's some of them that make a game out of it too. And that's, I think, where my problem lies, is a lot of it, it's kind of like gambling a little bit.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of these dealers that they'll have, you know, all right, we're going to do 250 lots today. And every lot you bid, and whoever wins the bid, the wheel spins and you win whatever the wheel comes up on. And don't get me wrong, I've gotten some amazing stuff doing that. I've gotten an Angelina Jolie signed Funko Pop of her character from The Eternals. I've gotten a Cheech and Chong 2-pack of their characters signed by both of them.
That's awesome.
You know, things, you know, it's, but I've also got literally, I think 7 or 8 boxes full of anime Funko Pops right now. I don't watch anime.
Right.
So it's this thing of either I'm going to have to, at some point I'm going to have to sell them off or trade them somewhere. So, you know, I think what it's going to probably turn into is me starting a Whatnot show to sell off the stuff that I've bought that I don't want. But you know, the flip side of it is I have gotten some amazing things and I have a good time with it, but it's getting deadly, man. I notice that I'm going through money faster than I would like to. And it's I can't deny it's a little bit of an addiction.
If you ever want to gamify that and unload some anime Funko Pops, because I'm sure some people, that's like exactly what they're looking for.
Oh, yeah.
Let me know. I'd love to come hang out and help you with it.
Yeah, I mean, anime is actually Funko's most popular genre.
I believe it. And yeah. I feel like you and I are both guys that when we're at the convention, when we're at Pensacon, or when you're at any number of conventions and we see anime characters, it's kind of like, that's cool. I have no idea what that is.
Yeah. It's you know, and I've gotten, you know, a few things in that regard that I know are rare, or they're autographs, or they're things like that, that I know are worth something, that I've gotten, you know, for, you know, 10, 15 bucks at most. And that I know I could turn a profit on. I just got to figure out when and where to make the time to do that. So
talk to me sometime after we're on air about what those things are, because there's a couple of animes that I'm actually a big fan of, but massive blind spot otherwise.
Okay. Yeah. Well, just out of curiosity, what are the, because, you know, we're this is coming out on a week where there's a big anime movie coming out in theaters, Chainsaw Man, which is one of the most popular anime series out there right now. It's getting its first movie. The Demon Slayer movie is still in theaters. So obviously anime is mainstream in the U.S. at this point. You may not think so, but it absolutely is. So quickly, what are your anime go-tos? Because I've been kind of thinking about trying to find something, too.
I'm an old head, so obviously it started with Akira, which was like Pioneer.
Yeah, I've seen Akira.
Producing one that they released over here in America. I really like a show called Death Note. Chainsaw Man looks awesome. I'm really excited about that movie, even though I haven't seen the show. And then obviously I like things like Naruto, Dragon Ball Z. Bleach is pretty fun, even though there's a ton of it. But also things that might not be considered anime as much, like Blue-Eyed Samurai.
Yeah. Well, I am told that Chainsaw Man, you really do need to have seen the series before you've seen the movie. So just take that into account. Yeah. We got to take a break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
We've got the right to choose it. There ain't no way we'll lose it. This is our life. This is our song. We'll fight the powers that be just. Don't pick our destiny cause. You don't know us. You don't belong.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line with us. And, you know, Jeremy, I have such a soft spot for that song. I'm a big fan of the original version. That Twisted Sister album, Stay Hungry, is like one of those albums that, like, there was a thing going around social media maybe 5 to 8 years ago that was 10 albums that had an influence on you that would surprise people. And that was one of the albums that I did when I did that. I'm
that
not really,
to me.
I don't think a lot of people think of me as like a real metal guy or a real, you know, but that album and that song in particular, it has a lot of meaning for me and always has. So that came out when I was in maybe 7th, 8th grade, somewhere in there. And that was the anytime I was pissed off, basically, if that's something I'm allowed to say on the radio. I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
And music just hits different when you're at that age, doesn't it?
Yeah. That was the album that I would go in my room and slam and lock the door and put it on full blast and just.
It's when your parents told you to do chores.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah, I mean, you know, you had that great music video with Mark Metcalf from Animal House playing the drill sergeant dad, and trying to oppress his kid, and then the band, you know, it's like this magical thing going on, But yeah, I've always loved that song. I always loved that album. I have a soft spot in my heart for Twisted Sister. I have a soft spot in my heart for Dee Snider, because not just for that, but because he is somebody who has always stood up for what he thinks is right. Somebody who, you know, when the PMRC came along and was trying to censor music, he was somebody that got up in front of, you know, these hearings in front of Congress and spoke out against it. And, you know,
incredibly eloquently too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Smart guy. And, yep. And continues to do so. Anyway, he put out this version, this acoustic version of that song in 2016. And the reason we're playing it today is because it was very effectively used in the season finale, possible series finale of Peacemaker, on HBO Max, which just wound down its season, a couple of weeks ago. We've been kind of given a little bit of breathing room for people to discover what's going on here. And I want to talk a little bit about the series overall, but I really want to talk about where this goes means for what James Gunn is doing with the DC universe.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So do you have any thoughts first of all about the wrap up of the season? It's a controversial ending for a lot of people.
It is a controversial ending. And I think just for where I'm at right now and on the heels of Superman, I just have really liked that James Gunn is willing to have fun and give us stories that are like it just thoroughly enjoyable. I know they deal with some darker theme matter, and this season definitely didn't short us on any of like the kind of grim violence that you would expect from the Peacemaker world. But it, for the most part, wrapped up on this really positive note. I liked seeing the inception of their, help me out, what's the name of their team?
Checkmate. Which is,
that was really cool.
Which is a big thing from the comics. That was not a small thing that they introduced there, just for the record.
I imagine it could play a big factor moving forward. But anyways, to your point, it was a little divisive, and I felt like I was just on the other side of it, because as the season ended, I immediately got on social media and was just like, man, James Gunn has done it again. That was awesome. But I didn't know that it could potentially be the last season of the show, so that kind of leads some major questions. But yeah, I liked it a lot. Leo, what about you?
Well, to clarify, he has said that we will see these characters again. He has said he doesn't know if it will be another season of Peacemaker, but we will see these characters again. There were two big things dropped from the comics over the course of this last episode that I was not expecting, that both have major ramifications for whatever is going to come next. One is Checkmate. Checkmate is a very big organization in the DC universe. It means a lot. Probably should have seen that coming when they introduced Sasha Bordeaux to begin with, but I didn't.
And so he's a part of that in the comics.
Yeah, and when they panned out and showed you that name, it was not the name I was expecting to see there. There was another group that Peacemaker was part of that was called the Pax Association or something like that, Latin word for peace. And I was kind of expecting that's where that was going. And it did not. It went in a different direction. And Checkmate is a very important agency in DC Comics. It has been since the late 80s, early 90s, somewhere in there.
Okay.
And continues to be. And so that's not a small thing.
What is their primary function in relation to these other groups?
So there's been some changes to it over the years, but Checkmate in its original incarnation was kind of like the other arm of the Suicide Squad. Amanda Waller was running both of them.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Checkmate was the keep the metahumans in line, and Suicide Squad was exploit the metahumans.
So then if for a layman like me, you could say they're kind of like the Boys, only they kind of are under Amanda Waller's thumb.
Yeah, with the Boys with official sanction, basically.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, but not as, violent and over the top or anything like that. The other thing that that they dropped is where we end the episode in this episode. And me being a comics guy, I saw it coming before the end of the episode. Like, okay. as soon as I heard the word salvation, my jaw dropped. As like,
what does that mean to you?
Oh crap, I know where we're going, and I think I know what's going to happen at the end of this episode. And I was basically right.
Okay.
So in the comics, there was a comic series called Salvation Run. And what it was, again, Amanda Waller was in charge, along with Rick Flagg Jr., who did not do it. Well, comics, he died, but he got better, and was around at the time. They decided, we've had enough of these metahuman supervillains. We're going to ship them all off to this other planet and leave them there. Mm-hmm. We're gonna strand them on Gilligan's planet over here, and they can go do whatever they want over there. They can live their lives over there without endangering anybody here on Earth.
Uh-huh.
And as soon as I heard Rick Flagg say the word salvation, I was like, oh my God, they're gonna do Salvation Run. And that's what that is. It's Salvation Run is all of the supervillains on a planet together, trying to form societies. They break off into warring factions, and they're all trying to find a way back to Earth. And
but it sounds like in the show, as opposed to just doing villains, we might be doing all metahumans.
Well, that's to be debated. Yeah, that what constitutes a villain, and what will Rick Flagg Sr. constitute as being a villain, especially with him being influenced by Lex Luthor. And by people that work for Lex Luthor, and him, becoming buddy buddy with all of these people that just tried to kill Superman,
while also having a relationship with the characters from the Creature Commandos, is interesting. I'm sure there's room for some nuance and some conflict there.
It's a big heel turn for Rick Flagg. It will be interesting to see where that goes. But it's going to be interesting to see how this plays into the overall DC universe. And James Gunn has been out there talking about this a little bit. He actually did a great interview with Screen Crush recently, which I was surprised to see they got that interview, but good for them that they did. So awesome that they did. And he was very complimentary toward them and told them he watches their show and he has to watch out when he's watching it because his dog sees their dog on the screen and goes nuts. And yeah, you know, like the whole thing, they of course geeked out over that. But the planet that they were sent to in the comics, they thought that it was, and you get a little hint of this at the end of the season of Peacemaker too, they thought was just this planet that was devoid of any kind of sentient life, but it was fine and they'd all be fine there.
It would make no sense if you can breathe the atmosphere, but just throwing that out there.
Yeah, turns out that this is a planet that was being used by Desaad, who was a lackey of Darkseid, to train parademons. And so you've got all of these villains abandoned on this planet full of parademons. Gunn has said that he's not necessarily leading to that, but there's something there. We heard that it was like the other thing that the ending of this episode gave me vibes from was Lost. Mm-hmm. You have him dumped on this abandoned planet or island or whatever you want to call it, and you hear something out there in the woods. I mean, that was the setup for Lost. Guys, we're not alone. So it's going to be interesting to see if this, I'm assuming that this is something that's going to continue at least through phase one of what James Gunn has planned with DC, where we're probably going to see other characters get dumped onto this world. What the end game here is, I don't know, but I'm very interested to see what that is.
Absolutely.
It's a big move. And it implies that we're going to see a lot of villains. And what I would rather see this lead up to rather than Darkseid, and which I think may be what happens, I want to see this lead to something we have not seen in movies so far.
Which is?
The big supervillain team up.
Oh, yeah.
It's a staple of the comics. It's a staple of animated series. We have never seen it in live action. Give me, you can call it the Legion of Doom. You can call it the Secret Society of Supervillains. You can call it the Injustice Gang. I don't care what you call it, but give me that.
Injustice Gang. Why does that sound right to me for some reason?
Well, that is one of the villain teams that have been out there. But given that we have a Justice Gang right now, that name would really work maybe better than any other. We got to take a break. We're back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
I know just where you live. I'm a devil. I know you got a soul to give. Well, I'm a devil. You, the devil! Well, I'm a devil. Hey, hey, my homie. I'm a devil, like a belt of beasted iron glove, the devil. Oh, yeah!
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Jeremy Branch is my co-host. He's on the line, and we're getting into the Halloween spirit. Can't think of a better way to do that than with that song. The Amazing Royal Crowns, Do the Devil. Oh, I love that song. A band near and dear to my heart that is actually last year or so has started to get back out there doing some stuff again. And I sure wish they'd come somewhere near here and could see them again. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But we're going to plug along into what we wanted to talk about for the Halloween portion of our show here, Jeremy. And I'm going to let you take the lead a little bit here because this is a this is all you're doing here. It's all your idea.
So as Julio and I have been doing this show for a couple years now, we always want to kind of spend at least an episode in October talking about horror films. And we were trying to explore some interesting ways to do it, and we got into discussions about, you know, maybe family films that are appropriate for those of you that have kids, also movies that we would have seen when we were very young, and then kind of on one end, the evolution of the MPAA rating. And then maybe we're going to go through and talk about some good picks, regardless of what kind of your age or your experience with horror films are. I think mostly we're going to stay within the realm of movies that people have heard of. Maybe these are movies that you've listened to and heard stuff about over the years, but you haven't had a chance to talk about yet. But I think a good place to start this is with the conversation, and Julio, you'll be able to kind of set this up for everybody. The fact is, at a certain period of time, movies were either PG, which just meant parental guidance, or they were rated R, meaning restricted, that they were only for people over 17 years old. Then you would also have your X-rated movies that actually did have a little bit of play back in the 1970s at a very strange time in American history. But I say all that to say, for a long period of time, there were many, many horror films that were actually rated PG. And then there was a certain point when Julio and I were both a little bit younger, at some point during the 80s, where there was a decision made that there needed to be something between everybody can see it or nobody that's not an adult can see it. And Julio, you kind of want to talk us through that part of it?
Yeah, I mean, when we were having this discussion about how we were going to talk about this, and we kind of were... some of the inspiration was those iceberg graphics that you see on social media sometimes of all the things that are above the iceberg and all the things that are below the iceberg. And, you know, I had come up with the suggestion of, I'm trying to remember exactly how I put it, but, that there would be a discussion of where the line is between something that's just spooky, supernatural Halloween fun that most families can enjoy, and something that's more straight up just for grownups. Uh-huh. And I said in so many words, well, the line is Gremlins. Gremlins.
So there's a couple reasons why.
Well, I mean, one is that Gremlins is a PG rated film, but it is a PG rated film that, along with one other film that Steven Spielberg was involved with, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, were both films that were in risk of getting an R rating, and that the producers and director were able to go to the MPAA and say, this is not an R film, and really successfully argue their case, but at the same time argue, we need a rating that is somewhere between PG and R. And thus PG-13 was created and has now become kind of like the target rating that people go for, so that it's not just too clean to be just, you know, where PG at one time was not thought of as just for kids. Now it kind of is. And versus, you know, an R rating as being just for adult, you know.
And it's really interesting as we start to kind of go through this iceberg that PG-13 itself can be a relatively broad categorization when you mention a movie like Gremlins versus something like Sinister. So the way we're going to look at the structure of this iceberg is G and PG are going to be the top of the iceberg. And that would mean if you're not an experienced fan, or maybe you want to introduce somebody in your life into horror films and they're not sure if it's their thing or not, maybe they'll exist in that space above the iceberg. As we get a little bit further below the surface, we're going to start to get into your PG-13 movies and then your R movies. And then maybe we'll discuss a couple of the kind of more exploitation unrated films that have recently kind of come into prevalence.
Yeah, but it's the stuff. So, it's the stuff that's above the water is more or less suitable for all ages audiences.
Yes.
Versus the stuff that's below the water, maybe for one reason or the other, is a little more mature.
So you mentioned a movie like Gremlins. Do you think that is like a good gateway horror movie, and that families could watch it with maybe a 10-year-old and not be too disturbed?
I think Gremlins is the waterline.
Yeah.
I mean, I do. I And there are other movies that I could put at that waterline that, you know, regardless of what the MPAA rating is. I mean, another great example is Poltergeist.
I think that's a good example.
Poltergeist, which came out a few years before the implementation of the PG-13. It came out in 82. But that's a pretty scary movie. And it has some pretty scary scenes in it, and some pretty, you know, stuff that verges on gore that I think that, like, if that movie had come out 4 years later, it would have been a PG-13 without a question.
I would say, in particular, in Poltergeist, the clown coming to life, the doll that the son has, very creepy and iconic scene.
Well, the guy ripping off his own face in the mirror.
That's pretty crazy as well, and maybe even a level above that as far as just strange production lore is that they actually used corpses in the pool scene at the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of wild. I think those are two good examples. I think Gremlins is a more comedic movie, and there's a lot less human deaths in it. Not that it's devoid of any, but they're kind of pulled off comedically.
Yeah, and I would say it's fair to say that the people that do die in Gremlins are the people that you are rooting for to die anyway.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point.
Yeah, it's so there's, you know, it's not like, you know, a modern day slasher where the characters that you feel sympathy for are killed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you ever see Roald Dahl's The Witches?
I have not. I've not seen either version. I know there was a new version done in the last couple of years with
Anne Hathaway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course, the original film version was with Angelica Houston several years ago.
And it's incredible. And Jim Henson did the special effects and the monster makeup for it. Mm-hmm. And while it is, you know, the epitome is based on children's literature, I think it is one of those movies responsible for traumatizing a large generation of kids that watched it at a young age.
Well, so let's move over to the tip of the iceberg and kind of lead up to this point. So the tip of the iceberg would be, you know, very inoffensive G-rated movies that, you know, will have that kind of spooky atmosphere that are not, I wouldn't say they're scary, but they have like that spooky atmosphere to them. They have some things that might scare very little children, but uh-huh. but they wouldn't traumatize anybody or anything like that. And in another way, it makes sense for it to be the tip of the iceberg because it's a very small group of films that could be at that tip, mm-hmm. and still be worth watching. A lot of the stuff that you would think of in that category is either direct-to-video stuff that is not necessarily very good, or it's a lot of the like TV specials, the half-hour perennials that come around every year that aren't really necessarily films. You can have that argument about whether it's a short film or not, and maybe it is. But to me, if it was a made-for-TV special, and this is an argument I've had about A Charlie Brown Christmas, it's not a
terrifying
film. It's not a film. It's a TV special. There's a difference.
Yeah, agreed.
So I wouldn't say, you know, it's The Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. Absolutely a holiday classic. Absolutely available to all general audiences, but it's not a film.
Right. No, agreed.
Yeah. So when you're getting down to the idea of what is a feature-length film, there's really only a couple of things I can think of that are G-rated that I think fit the tip of this iceberg. One is a Disney film, The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad, which...
So what's interesting about that one is it really is half not meeting the criterion.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But then half totally does.
For absolute certainty. It is basically two short films that were put together as a theatrical feature-length film.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, what we're talking about is the Ichabod portion of the film, which is, of course, the story of Sleepy Hollow and the story of the Headless Horseman.
Iconic.
Yeah, very well done in an animated version from Walt Disney at the peak of the, you know, the original era of Walt Disney. The Mr. Toad story is a lot of fun, too. I'm an unabashed fan of Mr. Toad. But that's one. And then another Disney movie, live action, Escape to Witch Mountain. You're dealing with kids with supernatural powers. It's right there in the title, Witch Mountain.
I've never seen that.
Yeah, it's a classic. But we've got to take a break. We'll be back with more just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I tell you how to cyclops rock, and then you
I'm sick, like Chucky was sick. My defeated heart keeps beating on. I won't die, like Chucky won't die. But I'm not here to socialize. Gotta find a new place to hang out, 'cause I'm tired of living in hell. I'm a mess since you cut me out, but Chucky's arm keeps me company. I'm a fright with my tombstone smile. All the children run away from me. Gotta find new friends to hang with.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line. Happy Halloween, everybody. Just a few days away from the big day. And we are kind of going through a little Halloween iceberg of some spooky movies that might be appropriate for you and your family, depending on what level of maturity and content that you're happy with for your family. So we went through a couple of G-rated titles. We're moving into the PG spectrum here now, which again is a little bit of a rarefied air, but there's a lot of stuff that would fall into this category that I think for the most part is inoffensive to the whole family. You know, you get your things like your Hotel Transylvania's and your, you know, Coco is certainly dealing with ghosts in the afterlife and things like that. A lot of animated films are PG now, and PG I think is kind of the new G for a lot of people.
Yeah, it seems like it.
Jeremy, did you have some films that you wanted to throw in here?
Well, I did. While we're on the topic of this, I did want to mention, as Julio said, it was back at the release, after the release of Gremlins, that they did start releasing PG-13 films. So if you go back a little bit further than that, you'll find movies like The Return of Dracula and Taste the Blood of Dracula and The Bird with the Crystal Plumage that you would not think would be PG. So let's kind of look at things in terms of 1980s in particular being on the more safe side. But yeah, I think there's a lot of good ones. Some of them that we did mention, and I know one that we're both fans of is Beetlejuice, and despite it being just a crowd pleaser that both of us loved when we were younger, there might be some subversive material in it.
I mean, there's definitely a single F-bomb in there. I could tell you that for sure, which is very surprising in a PG film, but apparently at one point you used to be able to get away with one F-bomb in a PG film.
That's so interesting. I thought it was a PG-13 movie you could get one in.
Yeah, well, I believe that's the case now. But at the time, even though this was after the PG-13 was created, you know, were able to get by with one, because there is definitely one in there. There's definitely some, you know, some rude behavior and that sort of thing, but it's not a gory movie or anything like that. That's a favorite. You know, another movie that you might be surprised to hear is a PG rated film is Jaws.
That's a good point. Absolutely.
Yeah. But you know, the same time, there's not a lot of gore in Jaws. There's a little bit, but. And, that's kind of getting off track because it's not the kind of supernatural thing that we're talking about. But when you're getting into the content rating, that's where we're at. Now, is there anything else that's a PG film that you would feel like you wanted to recommend as being like a supernatural, fun, spooky, family-oriented film?
Did we talk about The Nightmare Before Christmas yet?
We did not. Is that a PG or is that a PG-13?
I am 90% sure it's PG.
Okay, I think you're right. I think it probably is, and I think that might be the best example that you can possibly think of. There's absolutely nothing that I think anybody that would be offended by in that movie. It is a PG. I just looked it up, and it definitely captures the spooky supernatural feeling of the season, and is a good lead into Christmas too, which you know, as we know, is right around the corner after Halloween. Not to scare you in that regard about you know you've only got a couple of shopping months left and that sort of thing, but you know, deals with spooks and spirits and supernatural creatures and all that kind of stuff. That might be like the best one that we could probably point out.
I think Tim Burton is kind of a good starter for people that maybe are interested in the kind of gothic and spooky aesthetic, but don't want to jump into anything that's going to be like upsetting. It has a little bit of macabre humor. There's obviously like Edgar Allan Poe influence in it, but it's presented in a way that I think has appeal for the whole family. Like The Corpse Bride is another good example of a movie that would fit in this category.
And another Burton one, Frankenweenie, is another good,
good call.
Another good example of that. It's interesting because I think Burton is a filmmaker that you can very easily associate with Halloween in a lot of ways. And I think that he is somebody that does a lot of stuff with a supernatural influence to it and may have, I'd have to check to make sure whether he's got an R film in him or not that's in that category, but definitely has G, PG, and PG-13 stuff that all falls into that category. So he's somebody that, you know, a younger person could possibly grow up with in that regard.
That was very much the case for me in particular. And going from seeing Beetlejuice at a very young age, so I remember when The Legend of Sleepy Hollow came out at the end of the 1990s as an R-rated movie. So I do feel like I grew up with Tim Burton in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if maybe Sweeney Todd was R-rated. That might be.
Oh, yes.
Was it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Arterial spray blood all over the place.
Okay, well, yeah, you're right, it is. I just looked it up. So, yeah, I guess he does have at least one R in there that would, although there's not a supernatural element to that, in fairness. There's definitely a spooky element, but there's not a supernatural element.
Yeah,
so
yeah, absolutely.
We may be, you know, splitting hairs there in trying to figure that out. But, you know, I think Burton is iconic in that regard. And if we move on to PG-13, you know, that you're kind of really getting into the wheelhouse there with... films like Sleepy Hollow, which again is another version of the Ichabod story. Films like Edward Scissorhands, which definitely has supernatural elements to it. Very fun films that definitely have that kind of aesthetic. But PG-13 is going to be kind of the wheelhouse, I think, for this aesthetic. Because while there is certainly supernatural stuff that gets into the R rating category, like this feels like where this kind of lives.
I tend to agree with you, and you touched on it at the beginning of this conversation, where studios obviously want to capture as large of an audience as they can, and some horror purists will think that the PG-13 rating comes at the cost of it being a disturbing or scary movie. You know, on one hand, we have something like The Conjuring that I think could be a really good introduction horror movie for adults that don't necessarily watch horror movies. On the other end of that spectrum, and not totally dissimilar, the movies probably even get discussed in the same conversation, but Sinister is extremely grim and very dark, and both of them have that same MPAA rating.
Well, yeah, I mean, just some things that, you know, we can name that are PG-13 that fall into the supernatural category that you might not necessarily have realized are PG-13 movies. The Ring is in there. Sam Raimi's Drag Me to Hell, which again, awesome. It's got some comedy elements to it, but it is also a pretty grim film in a lot of ways. The first Insidious was a PG-13 film. The Grudge, The Sixth Sense. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a fair amount of stuff out there that falls into this category. And even when you're getting into more recent, not necessarily a movie that I would personally recommend, but, you know, it certainly was very popular, Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yeah,
is very much, you know, it is a PG-13 supernatural horror movie, and that, you know, definitely keeps away from enough of the gore while there's stuff implied that would be scary for a young audience and still be relatively inoffensive.
So not to get too into your personal life, but as a father, was there a time that PG-13 was acceptable at your house before the age of 13?
It was kind of a, we need to see it first and make a judgment call, which is, you know, something I would recommend to any parent. You know, you can take what we're saying as advice and that's great, but I always feel like the movies aren't there to protect you or your kids from what you think is right. The MPAA is not there. It's the MPA now. It's not the MPAA anymore, but,
oh, wow.
You know, the media is not there to be your babysitter.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more with that.
It is your job as a parent to decide what is right for your and wrong for your child, and nobody else gets to decide that.
You know, as I look at some of the PG-13 movies that I've seen over the years, I would argue that some of them have been legitimately scarier than some of the R-rated movies that I've seen. So I don't necessarily think that MPAA rating is necessarily correlated to scares, especially for young people, because side tangent, Large Marge from Pee Wee Herman is a scene that just like shocked generations of people.
Also Tim Burton.
Yep.
So we get into that PG-13 character, and I think that's where the broadest factor comes in. The other broad category for this, of course, is the R rating.
Uh-huh.
When you get into the R rating, you're getting into definitely more straight up horror. And we're going to pick out, I would like you, Jeremy, to mention a couple of titles that you think of that are supernatural related horror that we can recommend to everybody as we wind down the show here.
It gets a little more challenging. And again, it depends on people's thresholds, but I think Trick or Treat in particular is just a wonderful Halloween movie that, even though it is pretty macabre and has some even things that people are sensitive to, like child's deaths, I think it has a fun enough tone and a varied enough series of stories within the anthology that even people that aren't conventionally really into horror movies would like it a lot.
Yeah, agreed. Do you have one more you want to throw at us real quick?
I think Cabin in the Woods also kind of falls into a category of like, hey, you might not love all horror movies, but even if you are aware of them culturally, Cabin in the Woods is a fun one.
I'm going to just throw in a quick mention of the Nightmare on Elm Street series here too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But we are out of time. We hope you have a happy Halloween. We will be back next week. It'll be a short show next week, but we will be back. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.